This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is your host, Dr. Hal Schurz, and along with my co-host, who sits in this chair every other week, Dr. Michael Karuchik, we come to you discussing the topics that doctors discuss amongst themselves every day in hospital lounges all across the country about all kinds of healthcare issues. We let you in on those private discussions so that you'll be armed with the information that you need to fight for your healthcare freedom. This show is sponsored by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, which is a non-for-profit, tax-deductible organization. It was founded by doctors who are deeply concerned with the direction that healthcare is going in, and it offers solutions that are very different than those which have been enacted by bureaucrats in Washington who would have you believe that they know better than you about the kind of health care that you should have, who should deliver it to you, and where. This foundation is going around the country fighting for health care freedom for all Americans and trying to preserve the doctor-patient relationship, which is very much in jeopardy right now. So please go to their website, www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org, www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org, and contribute generously to allow the people who have put this organization together to carry on this fight on your behalf. You might not think that you need to get involved with this, but let me assure you that you have to. If you're not a patient already, you will be one someday, and you'll want the doctor of your choice there to take care of you when you need them. We've been doing this show, Dr. Karuchik and I, since June, and we've had tremendous feedback about the shows that we've put on, and I want to thank everybody who is tuned in live or who has downloaded the podcasts and listened to us. And I want to encourage you to please share these podcasts with your friends. Tell them what we're doing. Explain to them how important it is that they get involved in healthcare. We're giving you the opportunity to get the information that nobody's giving you about healthcare so that you can join this battle, which is going to be ongoing for the foreseeable future. And we've talked about all kinds of topics, and the topics that we discuss could literally fill a semester's worth of material at a college-level course. So we'll keep bringing you these stories and these topics as long as you want to hear them. And anybody who wants to tweet live while we're on the air, I encourage you to do that at Dr. Hal it's underscore Atlanta, Dr. Hal underscore Atlanta. I think that's my Twitter handle. I don't even remember it offhand. I have to look it up every now and then. But we're trying to get people to interact with us on the show, and this will give you the opportunity that you need to get the things that you want. Actually, it's just at Dr. Hal Atlanta. So please tweet with live comments, and I'll try to get them on the air. And if you have any suggestions for how our show is going, or future topics, or future shows, please send them to us at Doctor's Lounge at AmericasWebRadio.com. We love having guests on this show and having a conversation, but every now and then I just like to sit behind the microphone and share some thoughts with you about some topics that come to mind. And today is going to be one of those days. I wanted to really discuss today is something that we hear about all the time, which is the effect of Obamacare on medical innovation. And the reason why this topic came up this week to me is the confluence of things that I've just observed happening around us, and I'll share with you what that line of thinking was all about. But I've one of the things that I've wanted to do on this show, one of the features that I wanted to bring in, was bringing news stories, things that we're seeing in the paper every week or every so often that are making the news. It used to be more prevalent, not used to, meaning as short a time ago as 6 months ago, we were seeing multiple healthcare stories appear in the newspapers with regularity because healthcare has been catapulted to the lead with all the government intrusion into healthcare. But it's taken a back seat lately with all of the events that are happening around the world that make healthcare seem a little bit less important in the media's eyes. Although, if you are needing healthcare, it's certainly no less important to you on a day-to-day basis. But some of the things that have occurred to me lately that made me want to think about bringing this topic to the show today were things that I've just been noticing in my regular day-to-day practice. I'm an actively practicing pediatric urologist. I work every day delivering healthcare and seeing patients and operating. But some of the things that I've seen have been quite disturbing and quite startling. Personally, in my practice, I've been trying to write prescriptions for common drugs that I've been using for years, only to find that these drugs are unavailable. They're on national back order. And in the operating room, the same thing has been happening, where some of the anesthetic drugs that my anesthesiologists have been giving for years are not available, or IV solutions are unavailable. And this is really a crisis that's in the making, that's getting worse every month. And that's one of a number of things that I've just observed just in the general goings on in healthcare right now. Another topic that we've seen are the companies that are taking their businesses offshore. They're relocating them from the U.S. and purchasing foreign companies that do the same thing, so that they can move their headquarters to that foreign company. In healthcare, the big story was Walgreens, and the government called them unpatriotic for wanting to move out of the U.S. And take their profits with them, so that they didn't have to pay the steep U.S. taxes that are needing to be paid for doing business in the United States. They created a new term called inversions, which really did not exist until just a few months ago. They needed to create a name for this phenomenon and called it inversions, where companies bring their corporate headquarters to a foreign country so they can avoid paying taxes. Another big item in the news recently was the problem with the hepatitis C drug, how costly it was and how it's not reaching the people who need it. There are roughly 170 million people in the world who are afflicted with hepatitis C, and the drug that has been produced to treat hepatitis C, the drug by Gilead is the name of this drug is Sovaldi, which is a revolutionary drug, but it costs $1,000 a pill. And so the cost of treating patients with hepatitis C is out of reach for a lot of people. And we'll explore why this is in a little bit later in the show. And then you couple that with some of the outbreaks that we're seeing in diseases such as Ebola, which is well known now to everybody because of the pandemic in Africa and the new Americans who are afflicted with it, who are being flown to my city, Atlanta, where they're being treated at Emory, or the epidemic that's occurring in the United States with children with respiratory virus that is inundating emergency rooms and urgent care centers across 15 states in the country. And then on top of that are the problems with drug-resistant tuberculosis, which is something that we're seeing with greater frequency, made worse by the influx of illegal aliens and children who just came pouring across the border, over 10,000 of them who were not screened for communicable diseases, who are bringing those diseases with them when they're relocated to communities all over the country. So this is creating a public health crisis around the country. And then finally, the last issue that kind of plays into this stream of consciousness has to do with the FDA. The FDA has been in the newspapers quite often over the last few months because of problems with delayed approval for certain drugs. And the two big ones are Eliquis, which is an anticoagulant. It was a joint venture by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer that was that's an important drug to prevent stroke and blood clotting in patients who have certain heart problems. And it was a revolutionary drug that's been tabled by the FDA. Also, AstraZeneca had a drug that was a cancer drug that has been turned down several times for fast-track approval in this country. It's been used in Europe successfully. It's called Olaparib, and it's used for relapsing ovarian cancer patients. So when you take all of these issues together and put them together and try to connect dots or put them together with a common thread, it would have to be, you know, why are we seeing all of these problems? Now, one of the common talking points about Obamacare has been that the Obamacare regulations and taxes and issues surrounding it with regulation would slow medical innovation. It's a talking point that I've used myself. And when I looked at all of the things that I've just discussed and I took that talking point and I looked at it trying to see, is it really a valid talking point? I had to ask myself the question, maybe that isn't quite the end of the story as far as medical innovation. In other words, Obamacare isn't the reason why we're going to see a delay in medical innovation, but it certainly could be the straw that broke the camel's back in a system that's already strained to the max. And we'll investigate all of that when we come back to you in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
Certification. Do you know why becoming a certified healthcare consumerism specialist is more important than ever in 2014? Adding this specialized designation to your credentials tells employers or your clients that you understand how much our industry has changed and how to navigate that change successfully. IHC University's certification program offers coursework both online and live at their biannual forum conference series, and testing is completed online. Reaffirm your position as a leader in the health and benefit management industry. Download our certification overview and learn more at www.theihc.com. www.theihcc.com. That's www.theihcc.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schurz, as we talk about the topics that doctors talk about amongst themselves, such as Medicare, Obamacare, alternative forms of care, and health information technology. Join us every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is Dr. Hal Schurz. We're talking today about medical innovation and how Obamacare contributes to the stifling of this medical innovation. And I started the show by pointing out some things that got me into this stream of consciousness to discuss this issue and be critical about some of the dogma or talking points regarding Obamacare and its effect on medical innovation. So, yeah, everyone, including me, blamed Obamacare as a problem with stifling the innovation that we need to see in healthcare. But it really isn't the reason, but it could very well be the straw that broke the camel's back. And let me explain why that is. So Obamacare is a tax bill. I think that the people who are honest about looking at it can't conclude anything but that. It's meant to give the federal government more control over health care, and it's meant to redistribute wealth. So in order to pay for it, the government has to shake down certain concerns, certain industries, some directly tied to healthcare, like biotech and device manufacturers, and extract money out of other concerns like employers and consumers. Medical innovation was already strained by internal and external pressures, some political, some regulatory, some business, and some medical, before Obamacare came along. But what Obamacare did, it added more strain to this equation, and may have pushed it over the tipping point. So we have to ask, why are drugs so expensive, and why are fewer drugs being developed, and how does the government contribute to all this? As far as fewer drugs being developed, let's just look at a couple of classes of drugs like antibiotics and cancer drugs. There has not been a new class of antibiotics developed in over 30 years. And this is very concerning because injuries that are seemingly minor and irrelevant, like a kid falling off his bike and scraping his knee and getting a staph infection, could conceivably turn into a fatal problem if the superbugs that are mutating in the environment are untreatable because we lack the antibiotics to combat them. Some cancers, some leukemias, for example, are treated with drugs that have been around since the 1950s and 1960s. And those same drugs with the same side effect profiles are still being used. And there have been a very few drugs that are being developed in combating cancers. So you have to put these questions that I've just posed together, and you can look at the reasons for this in five general categories. First, it's expensive to develop drugs. Second, patent law makes drug companies less likely to want to spend the money to develop those drugs because they can't maintain the profits that they need to recoup what it costs to develop drugs. And I'll get into this. And by no means am I taking the side of the drug companies. I'm trying to just give an objective opinion about why we're seeing drug companies shy away from developing drugs, or medical device companies from developing new products. The third reason has to do with the marketplace. And there are many artificial barriers that have nothing to do with business, or I guess everything to do with business, depending on how you look at it, that will affect how much money or what their profitability is going to be on drugs. The fact that companies have to give discounts for Medicare or Medicaid, the fact that in countries with socialized healthcare, that they have to give steep discounts to those countries' health systems in order to get their drugs to market in those countries, and the U.S. subsidizes the drug costs for the rest of the world. So these are artificial barriers that are in place that cause drugs to be so expensive and contribute to companies not wanting to develop new drugs. The fourth reason has to do with the government. And Obamacare is a big reason why this is happening, but this has been going on for years, as I've said. Obamacare is just the straw that broke the camel's back. But you've got the FDA, which you can get people on both sides of this issue to argue about regarding whether or not they're doing the right thing or not, whether they're necessary as a watchdog or whether they're an impediment to companies developing drugs at reasonable prices. But in any event, the FDA clearly contributes to this picture. And taxes. I mean, companies are drug companies are businesses with stockholders, and they are accountable to those stockholders. Each and every one of you out there may have a 401k or a retirement account, an IRA, a pension fund, mutual funds with stocks in it that are drug company stocks. And the last thing that you want your investments to do are to have to pay more money in taxes and be less profitable to their shareholders. So that also is a huge contributing factor to this picture. And then finally, the tort system. Everybody who turns on the TV during afternoon soap operas or late at night sees ambulance chasing attorneys get on the TV asking, have they had any problem with the mesh implant that was put in? What about their knee implant? Have they ever had a side effect from this particular drug or that particular drug? This is hurting everybody, because when companies are having to defend their products or their drugs against frivolous cases, it causes the cost of these products, of these drugs, to go up for everybody. And the tort system in this country is completely out of whack, and it's a huge contributor to this issue. So, Obamacare. Why is Obamacare specifically stifling the innovation in healthcare? And the answer is because of taxes, because of the money that it is extracting from drug companies and pharmaceutical and biotech and drug device manufacturers. You know, the pharmaceutical industry, they did a a self-inflicted, made a self-inflicted wound, thinking that if they contributed a lot to Obamacare, that they would be able to get in return the ability to market their biotech drugs without generic competition for 12 years, something that the Obama administration reneged on. And so they were basically hoodwinked, and they were made to turn over a huge amount of their profits to fund Obamacare. So, you know, in the estimates over a 10-year period was that the pharmaceutical industry would fork over $38 billion just to fund Obamacare, with new taxes in addition to that, which they already have agreed to pay, which will average between $2.5 to $4 billion per year. And they'll also be required to steeply discount drugs to Medicare and take a 50% haircut on drugs for seniors every year who are reach the donut hole, which is the coverage gap in Medicare Part D. And so the drug companies have paid a huge price for going along with Obamacare without getting anything in return. The biotech companies and the device manufacturers, their punishment for not performing a self-inflicted wound and participating in funding Obamacare was for there to be a 2.3% tax on their gross, not their profits, but their gross sales, which have put many of the companies out of business or have resulted in many companies going offshore. So the end result of what this has done to the drug companies and to the device manufacturers, it has not only had an impact on their profits, the amount of money that they are taking out of profits to their shareholders, but it's also impacting what they're able to do in terms of research and development, so they can't do the kind of research that they need to develop the new drugs, which is how it's stifling innovation. And they're not expanding their own operations in the United States. Cook Medical, one of the largest medical device manufacturers, was scheduled to open up 5 new plants around the United States until Obamacare came to be. And since it has been enacted, and Cook has had to pay roughly $30 million annually in device taxes, they've scrapped the plans to increase their facilities. They were planning on opening up a new facility right away in the Midwest, which they're not doing, and the other 4 that they were going to build over the next 10 years are no longer in their plans. The same is true with other device manufacturers, such as Stryker, which has been taxed $130 to $150 million, and other companies such as NuVasic, which makes spinal surgery implants, and they're a smaller company, and they have cut their workforce 10% in response to this. So this is the reason why people are saying what they're saying, and we'll get into this a little bit more in the next segment. This is America's Web Radio, the Doctor's Lounge.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It was for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you are on your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org, and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
We're back in the doctor's lounge. This is Dr. Hal Schurz, and we are talking about medical innovation and how Obamacare is the straw that broke the camel's back as far as this is concerned. We were talking about the device, medical device taxes and the self-inflicted wounds by the pharmaceutical industry to fork over a good chunk of profits to the government to fund Obamacare. But what this law is doing to the medical device industry is it is resulting in them retrenching and just not doing the research and development that's necessary to develop new products and to move their businesses offshore or move their headquarters offshore and take their profits with them, the so-called inversions that we've heard about recently with companies that are doing so to avoid the U.S. corporate taxes. It's interesting that there is bipartisan support to get rid of the medical device tax, and this is one of the things that the Congress has tried to do to roll back some of Obamacare. When they say they don't think they can repeal it yet, but they can roll back some of the more egregious parts of Obamacare, this is one of those parts that there is actually bipartisan support to do. But despite the fact that there was overwhelming bipartisan support in the House of Representatives, Senator Harry Reid in the Senate refuses to allow that bill to come to the floor for debate, and he won't allow it to reach President Obama's desk because he is doing a blocking maneuver so that President Obama does not have to repeal that that part of the law, which he has vowed to do in a veto if it does come to his desk. So this is unfortunately a big part of the problem, and I like to think back to what Ronald Reagan said about taxes. He said that the government's view of the economy could be summed up in a few short sentences. If it moves, tax it. If it keeps moving, regulate it. And if it stops moving, subsidize it. And what we're seeing right now with the government's involvement in medical devices and medicine is the government picking medical winners and losers, like medical Solyndras. The next thing that I really wanted to talk about, we're talking about why it's so difficult for drugs to come to market, why companies aren't doing it, how Obamacare contributes to all that, and there were a lot of reasons why it's difficult for drugs to come to market other than Obamacare, and in fairness, I think that it's important that we talk about them. One of them is how expensive it is to develop a new drug. And Forbes has reported on this a number of times. over the past 4 years in some good articles in their medical column by their medical columnist Matthew Herper. And the one that really is, I think, the most staggering and eye-opening of all of the articles about why drugs aren't being developed is because of the high cost it takes to bring a drug to market. First of all, it is not a slam dunk. When a company decides that they want to develop a drug, there are a lot of barriers that have to be overcome in order to get that drug to market. And in point of fact, only 1 in 10 drugs that is started as far as development is concerned ever gets brought to market. So there are a lot of losers, a lot of drugs that they start to develop that just never get out of the starting gate and never even come close to being brought to market. So there's a figure that's been thrown around about how much it costs to bring a drug to market, and that number is unbelievable. It's $1 billion, and that's a large amount of money in research and development, in compliance, in drug trials. So it costs a lot, but that $1 billion actually is a gross underestimate of how much it really costs to bring drugs to market. So if you look at the companies, the biggest drug companies, and you look at how much they spent in total research and development, and then you look at how many drugs they brought to market over that period of time, and you divide that number into the total amount that they spent, you get an average of how much it costs to bring a drug to market. And that includes the losers that never get brought to market. So in other words, if a company spent, just for argument's sake, let's say $100 billion on research and development over 5 years, and they brought just one drug to market because they had so many losers, it would cost them $100 billion to develop it. If they brought 20 drugs to market during that time, it would cost an average of $5 billion. So it's just simple math. But when you calculate it that way, on average, the amount of money it costs for a company to bring a drug to market is about $4 billion, and it can be as much as $11 billion depending on the company and depending on how many losers or how successful or unsuccessful they have been at bringing drugs to market. And so with that figure in mind, knowing how expensive it really is to develop drugs, you can understand that the margins are looked at constantly. And if a company is paying 35% federal tax and on average across the 50 states in the U.S., 4% sales tax, so they're effectively paying 39% tax, and then you add on the taxes that have increased because of Obamacare, and there are 18 taxes that Obamacare results in, 18 new taxes. When you put all of those taxes into the mix, it's not hard to understand why, A, companies will bring their drugs offshore to develop where it's cheaper, and they don't have to pay taxes. In Ireland, the taxes are 12%. In the UK, they're 23%. So that's a no-brainer from a corporate decision. And B, regulatory hurdles, which are going to cost them money, are going to also be a factor that determines whether or not they bring drugs to market. So When you look at how much it costs and how long the drugs can remain under patent with a company, which right now is 20 years for most drugs, but some drugs, it's in the biotech area, it's 12 before they become generic. And it, that clock starts ticking the day they start development. So if it takes 10 years for a drug to get developed, they've only got 10 years left on that patent. Now, there are ways that they can extend the patents, but for the most part, that is something that is a little tricky and not a certainty. So drug companies, unless they really get feel like they've got a home run, are going to be reluctant to develop new drugs. So it's expensive, and this is, you know, a huge problem with whether or not companies are going to go down this road. It's important that we talk about antibiotics specifically, because the fact that drug companies are shying away from antibiotics is a specific and an important area. The reason why that's occurring, why there are no new antibiotics versus, you know, statins or heart medication or blood pressure medication, is because antibiotics treat one specific problem for a short period of time, a bacterial infection for a week, or an antiviral infection for a week. And the problem is that once that infection is treated, then you don't no longer need the drug. It's not like taking a statin, which like Lipitor, which you'll be on for the rest of your life, and it's something that the drug companies are counting on. So there's less incentive for drug companies to make antibiotics. And so that's why there is right now an international crisis with regard to antibiotics. And we're using the same antibiotics that we've been using for generations. The bacteria are becoming smarter. They're becoming more resistant to what's out there. People in medicine are giving antibiotics for reasons that they shouldn't be, and it's not just doctors. It's all, there are a lot of people who are not physicians who now have access to antibiotics, and there's a whole nother discussion about antibiotics and why they're given out so frequently. If a patient comes in and they're complaining about something, they feel that if you send them away, telling them that they should just take some aspirin or ibuprofen and drink fluids, they feel like they really haven't had a meaningful encounter with the physician. So they want to take something away, and the physicians are pressured into giving them something, and that's why antibiotics are misused so often, because of this fact, as one of many reasons. But this has contributed to a major problem with antibiotic resistance in this country and worldwide. And so this is the need for antibiotic development is something that that supersedes business decisions. And it's something that in some countries the government is getting involved with. But if the environment was made a little more favorable, tax environment, the regulatory environment, the legal environment for torts, then companies would be incentivized to take more risk, to accept perhaps lower profits, not wanting to have to get a blockbuster $5 billion a year product to market, knowing that they can accept less with less costs involved in developing the drug. We'll spend the last segment wrapping this up and tying this all together in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that sleep is an important weapon against infection? Sleep is important because it is restorative. During sleep, known as REM, the body recuperates and resets. For example, the immune system increases its activity and stress hormones drop. There is a correlation between sleep deprivation and frequent colds. The average adult should get 7 to 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep per night, and a child needs more since they are growing. Sleep hygiene is important to set a good foundation. Techniques to promote good quality restorative sleep include going to bed at the same time at night, avoiding alcohol or caffeine prior to bedtime, avoiding exercise in the evening, reading to a young child at bedtime, avoidance of drinking fluids late in the evening, and avoidance of taking decongestants at bedtime. If you are having problems sleeping more than once a week, you should see a doctor for further evaluation. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
This is Dr. Hal Schertz in Doctor's Lounge, and we're back talking about the problems with developing new drugs, new medical innovations, and how Obamacare is not the reason why this is happening, but is clearly contributing and may be the straw that broke the camel's back. And that's probably the fairest way of assessing what's going on without demagoguing this problem. So it's a tremendously complicated issue that has multiple factors. And and at the end of the day, the government being involved in healthcare makes the problems that are already there even worse. And there is a role, some believe, for the government to be involved, such as with giving breaks to companies that would develop new antibiotics. We spent the last segment talking about the desperate need for new antibiotics because of the proliferation of bacteria that are resistant to the drugs, the limited spectrum of drugs that we currently have to treat the diseases that we have. But there are other drugs that are in short supply around the country, and this was one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this today, because I started the show discussing the fact that I was trying to prescribe a common antibiotic, which is actually a generic antibiotic at this point, and I couldn't get it because of a national back order, and I never heard of that before. Why would something have a national back order? And that was what that fact led me to look into this and want to bring this to your attention today. This is a problem that is rapidly increasing in frequency. And we're seeing drug shortages for all sorts of reasons, not just the fact that there is Obamacare causing companies to retrench. This predated Obamacare, and the reasons that we're seeing drug shortages have to do with the fact that there could be manufacturing difficulties that are related to FDA regulations or other regulatory problems. There could be shortages in raw materials that would influence the production of certain drugs or medications or products that are manufactured by device manufacturers. If certain drugs required a certain crop for their production, and there was a problem with a drought or flood or something that resulted in that crop yield diminishing, that could result in a drug shortage that was related to that specific ingredient. There could voluntary recalls on the part of companies contributes to drug shortages, and the voluntary recalls again are done so that the companies don't get to the point where they will sustain over aggressive FDA scrutiny, or even worse, media scrutiny and potential lawsuits. There can be supply chain problems that are responsible for drug shortages, having to do with gas prices or with issues related to transportation problems. And then finally, business and economic issues, as well as regulatory issues, can result in there being significant drug shortages. With regard to business and economic factors, if a company is feels that profits are insufficient for them to recoup their investment, they'll cut back. Some of the things that have contributed to this is the proliferation of generic drugs. The drug approval status, whether or not the regulatory environment is going to allow that to happen. The expense that's required to correct manufacturing problems or mergers. And these are all external business-related factors that contribute to drug shortages. There are drugs that specifically have been problems. Oncology drugs, those are drugs that have actually impacted healthcare, because if there are drug shortages in oncology drugs, patients are not getting the drugs that they need. Injectable drugs, heparin. There was a worldwide shortage of heparin, which is a blood-thinning drug, anticoagulating drug, and that resulted in people having specific medical problems as a result of that with blood clots. And the factors that that cause drug shortages actually have direct impacts on the healthcare system. It causes expenses in healthcare to go up because people are not familiar with the replacement drugs, so they have to spend more time learning how to give replacement drugs. It can affect the labor costs as a result of that. So people in pharmacies are spending increased hours familiarizing themselves with replacement drugs, drugs that they otherwise would know how to administer without having to look it up and spend undue time learning about. It impacts the safety of patients. If cancer drugs aren't available, then clinical outcomes are going to be worse, and people will die from that. The same is true with substitutions. If a drug is substituted and people aren't familiar with how to give those drugs, then there can be medication errors and people will die. So this is a very complicated issue. The drug shortage crisis in this country is something that people don't talk about very often. This is a topic that isn't real sexy until something bad happens, but this is out there, and this is impacted by politics, by artificial barriers in the marketplace. It's bad enough when the marketplace itself has to struggle through this, but when you add the strain of Obamacare, for example, into this mix of problems that are currently occurring in developing innovations in healthcare, then it is the straw that broke the camel's back. It's the tipping point that makes things worsen and changes the entire equation for everybody. There are so many other parts of this that we don't have time to really get into today, and I would love to entertain questions about this. If you're interested in hearing more about this and establishing a dialogue about this, please go to Doctor's Lounge at americaswebradio.com, and I am more than happy to engage with anyone about this topic. Please go to that email address and tell me what you think about our show, future shows, topics for other shows in healthcare. My next guest in 2 weeks, when I come back to you, is someone who is a dear friend of mine. It's Dr. Beth Haynes, who is the executive director of the Benjamin Rush Society. The Benjamin Rush Society is I guess they've changed their name. It's the Benjamin Rush Institute now. Benjamin Rush is a free market institute that was developed by Pacific Research Institute in California, and it's dedicated to honest debate about healthcare issues, and it's intended to bring that debate to young doctors who are currently in medical school in training, where they very often get just one side of the healthcare issue from their professors and the people in academia. And Benjamin Rush brings debate, brings discourse to campuses all around the country, discussing healthcare issues, which are controversial and provocative. And Beth and I will talk about what it is that is necessary to inform young doctors in the coming years about how to deliver healthcare and what a free market healthcare system might look like, and it's something that they don't hear about on a regular basis. I'd like to thank David Moxley and America's Web Radio for allowing us to bring the Doctor's Lounge to you every week. I know that my co-host, Dr. Michael Karuchik, and I have enjoyed doing the show, and we'll continue bringing you the best in healthcare information sponsored by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation. So please support the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org, Docs for Patient Care Foundation.org, and help us to continue to preserve the doctor-patient relationship and fight for your healthcare freedom. Until next time, this is Dr. Hal Schurz in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
This is America's Web Radio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.